This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنْبَتَتْ سَبْعَ سَنَابِلَ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنْبَتَتْ سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. The city of Karbala in Iraq is hosting millions of Muslims who are commemorating Arba'een as the annual religious congregation reaches its climax. Back from Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit, President Raisi says the regional enthusiasm to engage with Iran indicates how Western sanctions and threats have failed. Plus, the inflation rate across Eurozone countries hit a new record high in August. Hello and welcome. Your world news come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us. Top story this hour. Millions of Muslims have converged on the Iraqi holy city of Karbala as the mourning period for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein culminates with the Arba'een ceremonies. The pilgrims have come together at Imam Hussein's holy shrine in Karbala. Most of them have been traveling on foot for days to reach the compound for Arba'een processions. Authorities in Karbala say exceptionally high numbers of pilgrims have already traveled to the city. From Iran alone, over 3 million pilgrims have joined the ceremonies. Arba'een is one of the largest religious congregations in the world. It marks 40 days after Ashura, the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia Imam and the Prophet Muhammad's grandson. He was martyred along with 72 of his companions during the Battle of Karbala in 680 AD.
Like the other parts of the Muslim world, Pakistan Shia Muslims observe Arba'een with traditional reverence and solemnity. Thousands of mourners march in streets of Pakistan to pay tribute to Imam Hussein, the grandson of Holy Prophet Muhammad, who embraced martyrdom in Karbala in southern Iraq some 1400 years ago. The battle was fought between the faithful followers of the third Shia Imam, Hussein bin Ali, and Yazidi forces on the plains outside the modern Iraqi city of Karbala, which is home to Imam's shrine, a sacred sanctuary for Shia Muslims.
We believe the legacy of Imam Hussein is a timeless source of lessons about humanity and loyalty that exceeded his time and place. The love for Imam is endless and will continue until the end of this world.
The Islamic New Year, started from the month of Muharram, has been observed all over Pakistan with great dedication. Muharram is the month of mourning for the lovers and faithful followers of Imam Hussein.
We're here to pay tribute to Imam Hussein, his family and his companions who sacrificed their lives to save Islam. The mission of Imam Hussein is the mission of truth, peace and justice.
Similar mourning processions and religious gatherings were held in all major cities and towns all across Pakistan with special security arrangements.
The mourners and religious scholars have highlighted the teachings of Imam Hussein and his uprising against Yazid in Karbala. They regard the tragedy of Karbala as the symbol of resistance against oppressors. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
Muslims in Nigeria are also marking Arbaeen with the symbolic trek over a long distance. Danjuma Abdullahi reports.
Hundreds of Shia Muslims took to the roads, trekking and chanting to mark 40 days since the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and scores of members of his family and his companions in Karbala in present-day Iraq.
Is this Arbaeen? In order to show our love and tribute to Imam Hussein and his household and his right companions that sacrificed their life entirely in order to save Islam.
Men, women, and children joined millions of other Shia Muslims to participate in the symbolic trek, which was organized by Nigeria's Islamic movement. The trek is held around the globe every year as part of mourning rituals for Imam Hussein. They praise the leadership qualities of Imam Hussein.
He's a leader of justice and humanity. He brought justice and humanity in the world entirely. Why? During the Battle of Karbala, he stand before the oppressors. I told them that he stand here not because of his priority, not because of everything, rather to bring justice.
Despite the heavy rain, the marchers trekked for several kilometers and ended their walk here in Suleja.
Prayers were offered here for Imam Hussein, members of his household, and his loyal companions who were martyred at the Battle of Karbala. Danjuma Abdullahi, Suleja.
Ebrahim Raisi, Iranian president, is back in Iran after attending the summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in Uzbekistan. Raisi says the visit proves the failure of Western policies against Iran.
Popular Iran's products are, and there's vast potential for cooperation. Contrary to the assumptions that Iran can be isolated through sanctions and threats, we saw the enthusiasm of regional countries to engage with Iran.
Raisi said the visit to Uzbekistan was made in line with efforts to enhance neighborly and regional ties and boost economic multilateralism. The trip was the first by a senior official from either Iran or Uzbekistan to the other country in more than 20 years. The president added that the two sides discussed bilateral economic and trade ties in areas such as transit and energy. Raisi also noted that Iran's full membership in the SCO was officially declared during the summit. He said this paves the way for the country to link up with regional economic hubs.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi and his high-ranking diplomatic and economic delegation has visited Uzbekistan on an official visit. The aim of the visit was to expand bilateral ties with Uzbekistan. Iran and Uzbekistan signed a total of 17 memoranda of understanding that the two countries would boost their cooperation in the fields of trade, cargo transit, cultural exchanges, health and custom issues, among others. Another important aim of President Raisi's trip was Iran's further integration into the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Iran has held signing a memorandum of commitments to join the SCO. The announcement was made by Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, who is accompanying the delegation on the visit to the city of Samarkand, which is hosting a summit of the SCO. It means that Tehran has now entered a new stage of diverse economic, commercial, transit, energy, and other cooperation with the member states of the regional body. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization was founded by China, Russia, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan in 2001.
Whereas Shanghai Cooperation Organization is about exactly what it says. I mean, it's about countries cooperating in the sphere of economic issues, but also security. And I mean, if we look, what are the benefits for Iran? Well, I mean, there are a number of benefits within the sphere of economics and security. I mean, the hard security, because I mean, Iran has been subjected to decades now of economic coercion and threat of military action by a US unipolar world, which has been using its institutions to coerce and squeeze Iran.
It's currently the world's biggest regional market, with 8 official members and 3 observer states. Iran and the organization started a formal process for Tehran's accession to the bloc in March. Its membership was later approved by the Iranian administration.
Получается в том, что этот саммит будет проходить в принципиально новой международной обстановке. Будет ознаменован расширением, вступлением в эту организацию Ирана. Мне кажется, что это очень важный тоже показатель того, что ШОС играет важную роль в международных отношениях, и эта роль будет постоянно повышаться.
The goal of Iran is to move away from the West and the US sphere of influence. Iran has also applied for membership at a BRICS group of countries. One of the reasons is to avoid and deflect the long arm of US sanctions. During the Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said that the bloc can confront Washington's unilateralism.
Despite the US-led efforts to isolate Iran over the past decades, Tehran's diplomatic weight in regional bodies is now growing. Iran's presence in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization will give it economic and political room to further integrate into the non-Western-led bloc.
This is a possibility for Iran to develop cooperation in such things as economic matters with other countries in the non-Western world. I mean, this is equally true for the large countries such as Russia or China, where, I mean, such an arrangement, I mean, it's beneficial for everyone. It's a reciprocal exchange. It's not a one-way exchange. And so I think in this regard, Iran, with its location and with its resources, is a very useful addition.
Iran has also applied to join BRICS, a group consisting of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. This forum represents 40% of the world's population and 26% of the world's economy. Ultimately, BRICS could become a club of the world's largest energy producers and consumers outside the United States. Iran holds the world's second largest gas reserve, and its membership in BRICS would result in added value for both sides. Iran's potential membership to the BRICS group would be a severe blow to US attempts to isolate Iran. It's believed that Iran's presence in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and its role in the BRICS Plus economic mechanism have both made Iran a partner in international macro decision making and in the political, security, and economic fields.
I mean, what happens here, it provides possibilities to create meaningful cooperative relationships with countries of the non-Western order. And this is the order that is rising. We can see lately too, I mean, Iran has not been the only one under pressure, but India as well for its independent position on Ukraine. So, I mean, these Western institutions are just absolutely part of their foreign policy agenda, which is to maintain US hegemony at all costs.
It will also elevate the position of the multilateralist front in the international calculations. Tehran, for a long time, has called for the pro-multilateralism front to establish and promote independent financial, economic, political, and cultural mechanisms in order to make a smooth transition from the current unilateral US-led world order to a multilateral one.
The British pound has dropped to its lowest level against the dollar in 37 years, amid signs that a recession is already underway in the country. Sterling fell more than 1% to under $1.14. It also hit a new record low against the euro. That comes as retail sales dropped more than expected in August amid rising prices and a cost of living crisis. The decline has added to fears that the British economy is already in recession. The economy grew more slowly than expected in July. It had already contracted by 0.1% in the second quarter. The inflation there is at a 40-year high of more than 10%. Economists predict that cash-strapped consumers are expected to further cut back on spending in the next months, aggravating the situation. European countries have been paying more for food and energy bills over the past months, mainly due to the economic fallout of the Ukraine conflict. In fact, official data indicate that Eurozone inflation hit another record high last month. EU Statistics Office Eurostat confirmed the annual inflation rate in the 19 countries using the euro stood at 9.1% in August. That's a surge of 0.2% from July. The current rate is the highest since the euro was created in 1999. The rise in food and energy prices has exacerbated a cost of living crisis that has hit households and businesses across the Eurozone area. Max Chivoli says the war in Ukraine is not the only cause of rising energy prices in Europe. He says energy giants are making huge profits in the market through financial speculation. Take a listen.
The euro area annual inflation rate hit over 9% in August, which is 6% more compared to a year ago, when the rate was 3%. Among selected the top contributor to the annual inflation rate was the energy industry, followed by food, alcohol and tobacco, and non-energy industrial goods. The major issue is the energy price, and it is widely said that the spike in energy cost is due to Ukraine and Russia's decision to shut off gas supplies to Europe in retaliation for sanctions. But it's not just that. The reason for the bruising rise in prices also lies in the fact that energy giants are making huge profits on the energy market through financial speculation. And for this reason, energy prices are going up and up.
Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan are blaming each other for violating a truce announced Friday to end their deadly border clashes. Kyrgyzstan says Tajik forces launched rockets at the southwestern border region of Batkin and opened fire on border guard posts. The Kyrgyz Health Ministry says 24 bodies were brought to its facilities in Batkin. Tajikistan, however, says Kyrgyz forces breached the ceasefire by opening fire on border villages. The two former Soviet states frequently engage in border clashes. In 2021, unprecedented fighting between the two sides killed 50 people. Israel carries out yet another airstrike on Syria, targeting the international airport of the capital, Damascus. The Syrian army says its air defenses shut down a number of missiles that targeted areas south of Damascus. It says the attacks killed 5 soldiers and caused some material damage. Israel frequently conducts airstrikes and missile attacks on Syria. Damascus has time and again warned against such acts of aggression and has lodged official complaints with the United Nations.
This is the Heart of Life pounding IRIB English Radio.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
Arba'in March, History's Greatest Gathering. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Pilgrims have walked step by step to reach Karbala. It was not only the feet and bodies which moved in the huge ocean of loving humans, but it was the loving hearts which drew the feet and bodies towards the shrine of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Hussein's love is an indescribable magnet, which no hardship can stop the pilgrims from marching till reaching the shrine. In this course, every pilgrim is like a drop in the ocean of men, women, and children. These pilgrims move toward Karbala to melt in the love of Hussein and to get a new life as they have become expurgated. They once again review the calamities of the Ahlul Bayt in their minds to sympathize with Hazrat Zainab and Imam Sajjad, peace upon them, as if they saw these great personalities and other survivors of the tragedy of Ashura who threw themselves on the graves of Imam Hussein, Hazrat Abbas, and other members of the Prophet's progeny and companions of the Master of Martyrs to shed tears for their dearest ones. There are different religions in the world, And more than 80% of the world population believe in a religion and are committed to a religious practice. No doubt, gatherings and ceremonies are among the outstanding manifestations of every religion. The Arba'in March is one of the greatest religious ceremonies and gatherings throughout the history of mankind, as it outnumbers any other gathering manifold. Muslims and even non-Muslims from every continent converge a few days before Arba'in, the day marking the 40th day after the martyrdom of the Prophet's younger grandson and third infallible successor, Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Arba'in falls on the 20th day of the Islamic month of Safar. The huge ocean of men, women, and children gather in Karbala on this day. Nobody has counted the number of pilgrims in this glorious ceremony, but according to the estimates, over 30 million people take part in this spectacular event. These lovers come to Karbala to revive their pledge of allegiance with Imam Hussein, to defend justice and freedom, and to fight injustice, slavery, humility, and corruption. According to a famous hadith from the 11th infallible Imam, Imam Hassan Askari, peace upon him, Shia Muslims consider it as a sign of faith to perform pilgrimage of Imam Hussein on this day. In continuation of the program, we are going to have a brief look at some of the events in various religions. Buddhists hold the New Year feast from April 13th to 15th. People in Thailand, Laos, and Myanmar mark the arrival of spring and pray for rainfall. They free some of the fish they have already caught and also beds and take sand to temples to wash and clean there. Zoroastrians consider a feast as opportunities for praying. The most popular public prayer among them is called Gahambar, which includes six feasts in six times of the year. These feasts are held to spread generosity and solidarity among the followers. Jews mark Yom Kippur as the most religious ceremony. It is held on the 10th of Tishri month of the Jewish calendar, and it is considered as the day of repentance and fasting. Jews pray singly or in congregation on Yom Kippur. Christians, however, mark Christmas as the most important feast. Christmas starts on December 25th, the birthday of Prophet Jesus, and ends on January 6th. Christians go to churches and hold religious songs and thanksgiving on the streets. One of the greatest religious ceremonies in the world is Kumbh Mela in India. This event is granted full coverage by global media. Hindus in this ceremony perform religious washing in Ganges River to cleanse their sins and hold feasts for victory over devils. This ceremony is held every 3 years in turn in the cities of Hyderabad, Allahabad, Nashik, and Ujjain. The population, which gathers every 12 years in Hyderabad, is estimated to reach nearly 30 million. This is while the Arba'in March is held every year, and according to the reports, over 30 million had taken part in the march in the year before coronavirus outbreak. In addition, this march is being held during several weeks, and its climax is on the day of Arba'in. Mm-hmm. The Arbaeen March has already turned into a universal event, no matter if it is cruelly boycotted by the world media, to prevent its awakening and enlightening effects for freedom-seeking people around the globe. It is only the Arbaeen March which has the capacity to attract not just Muslims from all denominations, but also non-Muslims. Hussein, peace upon him, attracts hearts towards truth and the innate nature to wake up and revive spiritual values. The Arbaeen March belongs to humanity from any color of skin, language, ethnicity, and even religion. Hussein, peace upon him, stood against oppression and corruption till the last drop of his blood and his last breath. Free-spirited people have found him as their role model. Miss Samira Comer from the United States has embraced Islam after years of studies on this religion. She speaks on the Arbaeen March. Reaching this road, there were a lot of difficulties for me, but when I started my march from the Holy Najaf toward Karbala, I saw nothing except beauty. Unfortunately, this huge flux of Arbaeen has faced news boycott of the European and American TV and media networks, as they know that if they show this love and affection to the Master of Martyrs, definitely there will be many questions in the minds about the event of Arbaeen and Ashura, and the love of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, will conquer the hearts.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Spiritual guidance for millions across the world.
Part 2.
In the year 680 AD, in the middle of the dry desert of Karbala, a man and around 70 of his followers were surrounded by an army of several thousands.
They all knew, even the women and children in that camp knew, that the enemy was not only ready to fight, they were ready to kill.
He knew that he was going to get killed. On the night of Ashura, he told his companions that tomorrow all of us are going to be killed. So anyone who wants to leave, let him leave.
Over 1,300 years have passed since this event, but Imam Hussein's brutal death is still commemorated every year. The day is known as Ashura, and remembering its message has spread across the world, including Britain. Why?
If we just let that message to be lost in the books of history, have we not betrayed Hussein? Have we not betrayed the grandson of the Prophet?
Karbala may have marked the end of Hussein's life as his heart stopped beating in the dry desert, but it was the birth of a powerful message, the message of a man who sought to rectify what had gone wrong. It is a story that has captivated the world.
For most people, it's very emotional. You can't really say add to it, except we should try and emulate Imam Hussein.
What we see in Karbala is a manifestation of the human spirit in its most fitri state, a yearning for justice. And so the events of Karbala, they don't only pull on our hearts, but they pull on our minds, they pull on our emotions.
The Quran criticizes Jews for killing their prophets, which history records that they killed many of their prophets, criticizes the Jews for killing their prophets. And I think one of the criticisms to Muslim Ummah is that they killed someone like Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet, peace be on him.
I have a lot of sadness to think that he was the Prophet's grandson and that he was murdered by the caliph of his time, and that it was an act of political violence. Was a senseless death in its way.
It's the most moving event, and it's an inspiration.
After Hussein was killed, people almost immediately began to sense his message. The first impact was felt in Kufa by those who had betrayed him or had turned back on their pledge in helping him. A large group of around 5,000 people who called themselves the Tawabun, the Repentant, realizing the enormity of what had happened, decided to take arms to fight against the Umayyads. The second impact was even larger and took place in Damascus, in the very palace of Yazid. Hussein's sister Zainab, who was captured along with the other women of Hussein's camp, began to publicize the news of Hussein's death. She also defended his cause so powerfully that those companions of the Prophet who were still alive, and even Yazid's household, were appalled by what had happened.
Well, the agony in Imam Hussein's story is that he was killed by a Muslim. He is the martyr who wasn't killed by a non-Muslim.
The impact that this event, this tragic event, had on Muslim community is tremendous. The shame of killing a person like Hussein ibn Ali for not paying allegiance to a person like Yazid, not putting up any fight or anything like that, just for not paying allegiance.
The impact of Hussein's message didn't just affect the Umayyads, but also anyone in the future who would try to distort the Prophet's legacy of justice. It quickly became a tradition to relate accounts of the brutal treatment of the Prophet's grandson and to defend his cause. People who heard these accounts would sit and mourn.
People find when they come to listen to lectures, when they come to remember Imam Hussein alayhi salam, when they come to remember what he went through, what he said, they find upliftment, they find spiritual gaining, they find motivation and inspiration for them to be good Muslims, to be role model Muslims in society, and to preach Islam and to understand Islam better.
In the vast expanse of the Muslim world, people would remember Hussein with grief and compassion. Seeing this, the Umayyads attempted to mark the day of Ashura as a day of celebration for their victory over Hussein. But then, something happened that was to shake the Umayyads to their very core. A trend was developing. Now, even those who had inherited the custom of celebrating Yazid's victory were beginning to commemorate Hussein's defiance. This has now reached Britain.
Everyone's come here to celebrate and commemorate the death of Imam Hussein and to remember him, and this is our call to the world that we'll never forget Imam Hussein. And he stood against terrorism that day, and we're today standing against terrorism with all this walking and all this marching.
We are inspired by the example of people like Imam Hussein and the martyrs. We are inspired not to give in to evil. We're inspired to resist. We're inspired to oppose and fight and combat evil. And so to me, that is very meaningful, very important, very significant.
I think it's something strange, which I don't think is ever going to happen again.
as you would not expect 72 people to go in war with over like 20,000 people. And it's just the way that they hold on as much as they could without any water or anything, and they just saved our religion.
The way him and his family were butchered, like, you could use the word butchered, really. The way they were butchered in Karbala, it's just so heart-wrenching.
As the commemoration spread, Hussein's name became etched in history. He became the symbol of justice. And visiting his place of martyrdom became a ritual. During the Abbasids, the second Muslim dynasty, visiting Hussein's place of martyrdom became so popular that in 850 AD, the Caliph Mutawakkil ordered his forces to destroy Hussein's tomb, to punish anyone who visited it, and to wipe Hussein's name from the pages of history.
If we do not pass on this message by the commemoration of this event, I think we have betrayed Hussein, as the people of Kufa betrayed Hussein. And certainly we do not want to betray the grandson of the Prophet. And we have the duty of passing on that message.
There's nothing in Islam or in the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, his family, that prohibits remembering him and his family. You have gatherings, people remembering the great exploits of certain companions as well. So people will gather together to hear about to learn and hear about the lives of the companions. So I can't quite see what is the problem for gathering together to learn and hear about the heroic actions of his own family.
Attempts to wipe Hussein's name from history was proving difficult. It seemed to only add to people's sympathy for him. Then, in 963 AD, everything changed. In Baghdad, people rose up and poured into the streets, beating themselves and wailing for Hussein.
Because of the passion and feeling of the community, Muslim community, this was kept alive. And now it has spread everywhere.
Soon, artificial fountains were set up in cities, towns and villages to remember the thirst of Hussein and his family. People would drink from these fountains and would remember Hussein with tears in their eyes. In the 14th century AD, during the Mongolian Timurid dynasty, the commemoration of Ashura had spread to the vast Sunni population of Khorasan. Also, a man called Mullah Hussein Kashifi, arguably one of the most popular Sunni scholars of his time, became famous for his book, Razatul Shuhada. This book depicted the graphic events of Karbala, albeit with exaggeration.
The whole commemoration ceremony in Iran is called traditionally Roza Khani, that is reciting Roza, referring to the book of Mullah Hussein Kashifi, Roza to Shuhada. And nowadays, of course, people here, we go to Roza Khani session, that's reciting Roza. They don't know what does it mean.
People had now developed an unstoppable passion for Hussein. Exaggerations gradually crept into all aspects of the story, the ceremony, and the mourning.
We shouldn't just make this as a passion play. We have to convey the message of Hussein, peace be on him. We have to discuss what he meant.
Today, when people do gather together, it's not just going over the past again. It's bringing the whole spirit of the event into our lives.
Various cultures and local customs began to influence new traditions of mourning. From people hitting their heads with swords, wounding their shoulders, and walking on hot coal. Islamic scholars condemned these practices as unnecessary. But it just didn't stop. Today, the centuries-old tradition of commemorating Ashura has spread across the world. particularly in Indonesia, Egypt, Turkey, Iran, Kuwait, and Bahrain, as well as throughout America and Europe, including Britain. It seemed that Ashura's message was global.
I think the message has a universality, because the experience of suffering and martyrdom are common to all sorts of great religions, maybe all of them.
We are talking about a version of Islam that touches the hearts of the people. And what attracted them in the subcontinent towards Islam was not a sword. That marching procession would inform the people of the entire story of Karbala and how it happened back in those days.
We have had many examples of non-Muslims, and especially the Hindus, who believe that Hussein is not for the Muslims only. Hussein is for us. Hussein Sabka. He says, Hussein Mera, Hussein is mine. Hussein Tera, Hussein is yours. Hussein Rabka, Hussein is of Allah. Hussein Sabka, Hussein is for everyone.
The Imam, on the way to his martyrdom at Karbala, invoked the figure of Yahya ibn Zakaria. In Christianity, we call him John the Baptist, who suffered martyrdom at the hand of a wicked man because of his righteousness.
The comparisons between the suffering of Imam Hussein and Jesus Christ were inevitable. In countries around the world, this has led to opportunities for Muslims and Christians to unite in the remembrance of these commanding figures. More recently in Britain, organizers of Islamic ceremonies have invited Christians to their programs to commemorate Imam Hussein.
There were about 9 priests in that program. And when I recite first suffering of Jesus and after that suffering of Imam Hussein, the night was Shab-e Ashur, the 10th night, Muharram. So many Christians, they were weeping. Even some priests, they were weeping. In the church, we finished program at 1:30 night. That priest came and said, it's wonderful, never happened in church.
To share that, what suffering means to me in my head intellectually, but also in my heart, what it means to me as a Christian and as a human being. And then to hear someone like Maulana Kazmi speak about the suffering of Imam Hussein and the suffering of Jesus as well, I just think it's really very, very important.
As we engage with Jesus' sufferings, then that is something which provides similarity with the Ashura commemorations.
The real life is a spiritual life. Look, the suffering of Imam Hussein and suffering of Jesus. We heard suffering of Jesus. How the 72 people in Karbala, in Iraq,
that sort of demonstrative showing of solidarity, yes, with the historical figure, with Imam Hussein, but also one with each other, can be a very powerful experience.
The emotion is terribly important, and for whatever reason, sometimes we don't let it come out, maybe because we're being too British and we're keeping a stiff upper lip.
Religion is not a matter of a private sphere. It's not something which you do for an hour on Sunday morning. It's something that affects your whole life. And so I'm all in favour of these great events being commemorated in a public setting.
In the last 40 years in Britain, the remembrance of Imam Hussein has grown. From charities, street processions to conferences, keeping Imam Hussein's name alive seems to be an important activity.
Imam Hussein Council, we are blessed. We've always had the participation from the heads of the states. We've had scholars from all the different religious persuasions, and we've had people from all the different walks of life, all of whom wanted to find out or write about Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Back in 1974, when I started, the community in London was very small. But there was a need for a centre where the commemoration of Imam Hussein's madrasas must take place. So the number of people grew.
One of the biggest suffering which Imam Hussein and his family encountered was the thirst. And therefore, it is our moral duty and obligation to see that each and every family at least get a decent, clean water for the drinking. And alhamdulillah, Lady Fatima Salamullah Alayha Trust has so far built over 125 wells.
Ashura is no longer for me, or the events of Karbala is no longer about a specific day of the year. It's actually imbued in the work that I do, both as an activist and as a writer. I find those events very meaningful and very powerful, and a huge explanation of what it means in Islam to struggle, and also what it means to really seek unity, a kind of divine unity and a unity of humanity.
I remember in one year I was talking with the police about organization of this session, and he has said we have to change 50 main road for this procession, which is important. And we have a very, very clear message from a procession for all people around the world, which is mean justice and truth all the time is alive.
We have started about 500, and now, alhamdulillah, it's right about 4,000. And inshallah, every year it's going to increase.
It shows that Imam Hussein's religion is still alive and the belief is still there. That's what this march is about.
Ashura is not just for a Muslim in Iran. It's not just for a Muslim in Iraq. It's for a Muslim and non-Muslim all over the world. I was speaking to my manager yesterday, and she's English. And I said to her, Ashura is not just for Muslims. Gandhi has talked about Ashura. Charles Dickens, a famous English author, has talked about Ashura.
I was very worried today because it was cold, it was raining, and I was sitting at home, very warm, comfortable. And I was worried because I thought the brothers and sisters wouldn't come out. So I thought I really must make the effort, show solidarity and come here. And I'm so cheered because every year it's grown. It's got bigger and bigger every year, despite it being so cold. I don't think I can shout over this, actually. This is too loud for me. But you should record this. This is fantastic in the middle of London. And it's a great opportunity to emphasize that Imam Hussein... I'm a surgeon. I've been living in the UK for 37 years. It's my home. I'm very comfortable here. And I use the teachings of our Prophet and our Imams, and particularly Imam Hussein and his stand today, 1400 years ago, to guide me. I think it's a principle for us that justice is essential, and you can't live your life without that.
Starting from Prophet Noah, and then by Abraham, peace be with them, and then Moses, and then Christ, and then last of them, Prophet Muhammad, peace be with all of them. The grandchild of Prophet Muhammad was the best of the examples. The spirit of Imam Hussein is about love, love for humanity, love for mankind, wherever you found them.
I come in every year, and I just love it. When I was a kid, my dad used to take me, and I enjoyed him. And for Imam Hussein, I do everything.
I have got a role to play as a Muslim, as a Shia Muslim, as someone who is believing in you have to stand for the truth, and always you stand for the truth, you defend it no matter what. It's unconditional, always you stand for the truth.
They gave their life to keep our religion, and that's why we're here, and everyone comes here every time, every year, and I hope every year will be the same as well.
It is difficult to find events in history that have been kept so alive. For many people, even hearing the name Hussein gives a sense of hope.
Wherever in my life I feel hopeless, I feel dissuaded, and I feel a bit, if I'm in a low, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is the name that provides me with hope.
Hussein's death has made people think about his life, his character, and how Muslims should spread the legacy of his grandfather.
When somebody went and told the Prophet that, Ya Rasulullah, I'm spreading your message, and the Prophet says, don't do it. He said for the second time, and the Prophet says, don't do it. He said, Ya Rasulullah, I'm spreading your message of Islam. And Prophet says, don't do it. And he was shocked. And Prophet said, change your manners. Let your characters be such that a person should come and ask you, excuse me, which religion are you following the characters of? And that should be the message we should continue. Not only the day of Ashura, not during the days of 12 days of Muharram, not during the months of Muharram and Safar only, but 365 days.
Now that Ashura has reached Britain, Hussein's message continues to spread. He is remembered as the great man, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. And he gave his life to uphold justice and to defend humanity. What Hussein did on that day, over 1,300 years ago, was to speak to the world. And the world heard him.
In the limelight.
Westerners say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. History shows independent nations have always made lemonade out of lemons, and that's the story of these days. In other words, Western sanctions will not kill Russia, but will create a new Russia which is gradually embedding deeper into the East. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote, President Vladimir Putin gave a significant speech at the recent forum. The core meaning was that the U.S. dominance in the world politics is declining, and it is impossible for any country to isolate Russia. Putin's speech drew several rounds of applause from the audience. Perhaps what everyone was trying to convey was that the rest of the world would go on without the U.S. Gone are the days when Washington dictated to the world to do as it wanted, especially when it comes to Far Eastern integration. A world without the U.S. may be taking shape. The world's largest industrial manufacturing belt is being formed in the Far East. An international pattern of cross-border labor division between China, Japan, South Korea, and ASEAN has been built, and total exports of the region have already exceeded those of the EU and North America combined. The next two decades will see the largest transfer of wealth in history, from both sides of the Atlantic to the Far East, where thousands of wealth management and trust companies are being set up. According to the Global Times, the Far East is becoming the innovation hub of the smart revolution. Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, Seoul, Singapore, and Tokyo are among the world's high-tech cities, and technologies such as driverless transport, airborne IoT deployment, sensor networks, cashless payments, energy-saving technologies, energy storage batteries, airborne surveillance, and telemedic are innovating and spreading far faster in Far Eastern countries than in Europe, the US, and other countries. The attraction of technological innovation has led to a growing number of talented people being attracted to the Far East. Since the financial crisis in 2008, the number of Americans living overseas for work or permanent residence has risen dramatically, with 4 million in 1999 and 10 million in 2019. The Far East is becoming the most favored destination by Americans heading overseas. China, Japan, South Korea, and Singapore all have national talent programs to attract entrepreneurs, scientists, and innovators to the Far East for stable long-term residency. Russia is precisely the most typical country that is accelerating its leaning toward the Far East. From this point of view, Western sanctions will not kill Russia, but will create a new Russia, which is giving up its illusions about the West and gradually embedding deeper into the East, finding a new self by enjoying the dividends of the rise of the East. Also, according to Reuters, in an attempt to underscore Russia's tilt towards Asia, Putin, speaking to the Eastern Economic Forum in the Russian Pacific city of Vladivostok, said that the West was failing while Asia was the future. Putin said, "We have not lost anything and will not lose anything. Everything that is unnecessary, harmful, and everything that prevents us from moving forward will be rejected." Putin said, "In terms of what we have gained, I can say that the main gain has been the strengthening of our sovereignty, and this is the inevitable result of what is happening now. This will ultimately strengthen our country